Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, 647 for comics originally released on January 1st, 2020. Or January 2nd if your store wasn't open January 1st.
Very true.
Either way, starting us off in DC is Harley Quinn number 69. Now, this is not a title that's on my reading list these days, but I figured, okay, sample it. And this is Mark Russell doing the writing. Okay, it's a humor book. He's a humorous writer, good fit. And I was pleased that this was a good, solid, done-in-one story.
Yeah, I agree. He just filled in for this one issue, and then it goes back to, I think it's Nick Spencer doing the regular writing. No, it's not him. I can't remember who it is, honestly, who does the regular writing on Harley Quinn. But I'm with you. I dropped off Harley. I went from issue 1 to issue 57.
I'll be honest, the cover of this one was not something that really enticed me to pick this up.
Oh, okay. I got the cover B with Frank Cho, so I'm not familiar. What's on cover A?
It's the hamburger-faced guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was his name? The cheeseburger, Mayor McCheese.
Councilman Cheeseburger in this one, but Mayor McCheese from the McDonaldland stuff. The whole issue is doing a riff on the McDonaldland characters.
Yeah, that was kind of funny, and I did not expect that in a Harley Quinn book. I was like, where did this come from? I hadn't been reading it, but this is a done-in-one, and I don't think we'll be seeing these characters again.
Probably not. I mean, the whole thing was around the Hambezzler's release after a 30-year prison sentence. That's the Hambezzler versus the Hamburglar. This guy embezzled versus burgled. Okay. But man, so clearly a knockoff on the McDonald's Hamburglar that it wasn't even funny. Or it kind of was funny, but kind of wasn't. You know, for me, it was. I saw the riff they were going with because it was blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
And they had Clown McCrown instead of Ronald McDonald, Captain Playhab instead of Captain Crook, Grumpus instead of Grimace, Councilman Cheeseburger versus Mayor McCheese. And of course, the Hambezzler had embezzled the McGobble's employee retirement fund, supposedly, and stuff. And
yeah.
It was almost a cliche, primetime TV police procedural sort of a thing.
Yeah, very, very much so. Yeah, now, did it bring up, I wouldn't say fond memories, but I brought up memories of these characters, and I started thinking, you know, I haven't been to McDonald's in forever, but I'm like, man, I can't remember the last time I saw those characters at McDonald's.
It brought up those memories, and I was trying to remember if there was an equivalent to the Captain Playhab, because I had forgotten about Captain Crook. So I did a little searching on Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
And got the list of all the McDonaldland characters, because I knew it was a riff on that stuff. What I hadn't realized is that there were a few other kind of references in here that may be lost on some people, because they were lost on me.
Well, I got the Mitch and Murray one. Did you get that one?
What do you think it was? Because no, I didn't.
Okay, I remember I watched a movie called Glengarry Glen Ross, and there was a speech by Alec Baldwin, and he was like, you know, I'm going to Mitch and Murray downtown. The people who basically were the owners of this real estate firm. But that's what I got it from. I don't know if that's what he's going for, but it sounded like it came from the movie Glengarry Glen Ross.
Could be. It could also be a slight nod to Sid and Marty Croft.
Oh, it could be that too. It's probably more like that. I'm thinking, I just watched that other little scene. It's a horrible sales scene, but we watch it for fun in my office sometimes. Just for fun.
Well, when they're in the Delaware Fried Chicken place, the DFC versus KFC.
Yeah.
There's a reference to you split like a banana.
Oh, okay. What was that reference to?
I think it was a reference to the Banana Splits show that Sid and Marty Croft did for Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, okay. All right. Very possible.
The reason I think these are references to Sid and Marty Croft and stuff is the Crofts, they were also doing H.R. Puff and stuff around this time. Around the time that just prior to the McDonaldland commercials being done. And it turns out they had been hired to do an ad campaign for McDonald's but the ad agency that was going to use them backed out at the last minute, hired former Croft employees instead. And there was a lawsuit around this, all that kind of stuff. And the Crofts wound up getting, I don't know, around $1 million in damages or something.
Oh, wow. So it's probably definitely a reference to that. And so he mixed in a lot of references in here. He has a real skill. I don't know if you call it a skill, but kind of like his thing. He loves to pull from pop culture and use the pop culture to bring in, you know, something from the 80s, 70s, even early 90s time frame, and bring in those characters or those things and put new spins on whatever he's trying to talk about in society and, you know, the norms that are going on right now.
Absolutely, because he could have done this basic story in almost any title. It could have just as easily been Deadpool instead of Harley Quinn here, or, you know, some other character.
Exactly.
You know, if you've got one where the tone of the story fits, you could have substituted her for anyone else.
Yeah, very true. So Harley definitely was not the star of the book. It was more he got a done in one, a chance to write. He came up with this story to bring it to life, to use these characters and talk about some stuff that went on in society, you know, around, you know, pensions and stuff like that in the 80s, and a whole story about, you know, people that come out of prison and what do they do. But he talks about these hot button topics in such a non-offensive way that very few people can get away with it. And he writes it in a way where it's not really a push button issue. It's just kind of an interesting little tale that's kind of funny.
I mean, if you're going to do politics and comics, to me, this is a good way to do it.
Yeah, I'm not offended. I don't think anyone from any side would be offended.
Yeah, it's a humorous look at the subject without being, you know, embroiled in modern day politics or something.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem to be preaching from any side. He's just talking about this character, the Ham Buzzler, and how he's impacted by stuff. But it was kind of corny, but at the same time, a lot of fun, too. I enjoyed it.
Corny is, I think, a good word for it, because, I mean, so much of it was just take a pop culture reference and flip out the name, you know, McGobbles instead of McDonald's, you know, Country Dew instead of Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
I did find the Hall of Food instead of the Hall of Doom humorous.
Yeah, me too. I laughed at that one.
And, you know, I'm not going to say it was brilliantly hilarious or something, but it was humorous, it was entertaining, and the riff on Clown McCrown versus the Joker in some respects was kind of funny too.
I agree. He's very clever. He's a very clever writer. We recorded, I don't know when this is coming out, it's coming out around the yearly comic spotlight, but I talked about him as a writer that I liked in a category in that episode. And the reason why is because he does, in his independent work and here at DC, these interesting takes. And like I said, it's almost like the hot button topics that we're going through in our society right now. And he makes them not hot topic or not a hot button issue. He makes them kind of laughable and enjoyable. And you just kind of go along for the ride. And I don't think anyone would be offended by reading it. And that's very hard to do. And he's also able to write things that are not comical, which I really appreciate. You know, like when he does, for example, Red Sonja. Mm-hmm. It's not – there's a little bit of comedy in there, but it's not a comedy book. And so I think he's really grown as a writer. The more I read him, since you guys reviewed him in Flintstones, I jumped on board with Mark Russell. I've enjoyed him more and more and more.
I still think the Flintstones was probably his best work so far.
I agree. I think that was the best I've read of him. Other than, you know, I love the Red Sonja, but that's me. I'm biased.
Well, and this is, again, the same sort of thing he was doing over in Flintstones, where it was a done-in-one story. He had a particular thing he kind of wanted to poke fun at and stuff, and he did a good job with it.
Yeah, this reminded me of that title. It's like you said, it's not quite as good as the Flintstones did it, but it's the same type of thing. You know, in the Flintstones, he had entire issues where he's talking about basically organized religion in there, but it was done in a way that's not going to offend you. It's just makes you kind of chuckle and question things, you know, the way that you look at things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really applaud him for being, you know, creative that way. Now, the art in here was also, I enjoyed it a lot. I thought the art was really good.
I thought it was solid. Yeah, it was good stuff. I even think the letterer did some good jobs when certain words were, you know, bigger, different color, and kind of almost bursting out of the word balloon and stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at, like, when she's yelling at Mayor McCheese, "I'm going to flame broil you." Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a perfect example.
Or when she's going up against Clown McCrown.
Yeah. You know,
this is going to be fun.
Exactly.
What got me with that one, though, is she's saying, "I haven't punched a clown in years." I'm like, has it really been that long?
Yeah, come on. It hasn't been that long. So, but, you know, the letter did a really good job in this.
Yeah, I think the entire creative team did a solid job. You know, the fact that this is not the regular writer, I think, helps for it to be a done in one, but also is no indication of would I like that next issue or not.
Correct. This and I only picked up this issue. I didn't pick up issue 70. I picked up issue 69 because I saw the writer in previews. So it did matter to me. And when we saw the pics, I was like, hey, this might be cool because Mark Russell's on this thing. And I'm glad I read it. It was a lot of fun. But like you said, I don't know if I'll go for it because this came off as corny, but it had that Mark Russell vibe. Whereas normally it's slapstick, you know, lowbrow humor to me that I don't enjoy. It's more like a Deadpool, this title, when he's not writing it.
Well, and there's also an aspect of I enjoyed the riff on the McDonald Land characters in kind of the DC Universe sort of thing.
Me too.
But that's not something where I would expect to get that sort of enjoyment out of the next issue. And if I did, it's not exactly what I want. I liked it because it was different.
Yeah, I liked it because it was different. It's something that I haven't seen and you don't expect to see. And I think it's Mark Russell knows the audience for comics today. And the sad truth is comics are written for people who grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s, because there haven't been a ton of new readers since then, I feel like. And so he's dealing with these characters like the Flintstones and McDonald's that are kind of triggers, or, you know, we understand, we were there, we grew up with these things. Whereas if you show this to a kid now, he's going to be like, well, who are these weird characters?
Yeah, if you don't get what it's referencing, it would certainly, I think, impact your enjoyment of the story.
Yeah, I feel like this is written for someone in their maybe mid-30s to 50, somewhere in that range.
I would say it's more 40s to 60s.
40s, yeah, maybe in 40s.
Or at least 60. And to 60, at least, maybe not into the 60s or whatever.
I would agree, yeah. And here I am, I'm 46. I'm right in the demographic.
Because I think the commercials were done back in the 80s, early 80s maybe?
Yeah. I remember I used to go to our local McDonald's and, you know, you'd have the statue of, or the little clown figure Ronald McDonald, and you have other characters. You don't see that stuff anymore, I don't think.
No, they phased those out. I think partially is because of the lawsuit back in the 80s and such. And I don't really think that most of those characters have made much of a comeback in terms of being used for the advertising.
Yeah, they're just gone. I didn't even know there was a lawsuit, honestly.
Until I did the research, I hadn't realized either, but a lot of it was hinged on they had the offer and it was pulled at the last minute. It was ex-employees that had been hired in place of them, and the likeness of Mayor McCheese versus H.R. Puffin stuff, huge head, that kind of stuff, their puppet type things. You know, there was enough similarity that back then it was grounds for, you know, a problem.
A lawsuit.
These days, I don't know if those things would still have been as big of a problem.
Yeah, I don't think so today. Back then, it seemed like, yeah, they were very protective of their property. Less so than today, I think.
Well, I don't even think it's just that, because, I mean, this goes across companies and stuff. This was only probably at most 10 years after, and I forget when the other lawsuit was, DC had sued Fawcett Comics over Shazam being too much like Superman.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember that.
Whereas these days, you get a halfway decent property out there, and everybody and their dog's going to do a riff on it within a few months if you're not careful.
No, it's really true, because you see so many things that come out that are just like other things. You know, if DC comes out with their speedster, Marvel's going to have theirs. And then, of course, someone who's going to be doing an independent comic is going to have their own speedster. And they're literally riffs off the same thing, but yeah, you can't really, you know, knock people for that. There's only so many powers, you know?
Well, and I think with every passing day, it gets harder and harder to be new and unique because so many things are in the marketplace. And there is an aspect of certain ideas may just hit the cultural zeitgeist or whatever at once. So you could argue, you know, like the Doom Patrol and the X-Men, you know, freaks with a leader in a wheelchair kind of a thing. definitely some similarities. Are they the same property? It depends how you slice and dice it.
Very true. And it's and that's tough to argue, you know, who came up with it and, you know, the differences and the nuances. So I think sometimes it's not even worth litigating at this point. You know, it's just whoever gets the most market brand recognition.
I don't know. I see both sides of it. I think at times there is a point to litigating, and other points, come on, just do a good story.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's hard to know where to draw that line.
Very true. But overall, I'll tell you what, this issue, I when I saw Mark Russell on it, I wanted to review it, and I'm happy I did, and I enjoyed it. And yeah. I don't think it was a bad pick.
I agree. I think this was probably one of the best issues of Harley Quinn to review, not having read it in quite some time. But the fact it was a good done-in-one story and stuff helped a lot. For me, it was a solid B. It was a really good read, but I've read the issue. I don't need to continue with the title.
Yeah, I am the same way. I gave it a B+ just because I liked it so much, because, you know, just nostalgia and stuff like that. It was written solid. I like the art. It's silly. It's kind of corny. Just go into it knowing it's corny if you're going to buy it. But I'm with you there. I'm not going to go forward with Harley Quinn. I'm one and done. I'm out until Mark Russell's writing it again.
Yeah, and certainly if he were to take over as a regular writer, I'd consider it. Don't know that'd be enough to get me on the book again, though.
I agree. Same here. So it's one of those things, you know, Harley or Deadpool. It really depends on the writer. And if you get the correct writer, I'll read it. If you don't have the correct writer on it, it's going to grate on my nerves and I'm done with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, sounds good.
This is Avengers Defenders Tarot number 1, or just Tarot number 1. I'm really not sure which it is, actually.
Me neither. Honestly, I don't know.
Because the, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
This is Alan Davis doing the writing, Paul Renard. How do you do that last name?
Renard, I guess.
Renard, we'll say, yeah. Doing the art. So solid creative team. This is not one that I had pre-ordered. Honestly, I'm not sure. I think I do know why I didn't pre-order it. The first issue, I don't think, was in previews.
I agree with you there. I don't think it was. I think I saw the second issue, and then I got that email from Eric. He was talking about there were certain issues that weren't in there, and we saw all the stuff on the Slack channel about a lot of things that came out that January 1st weren't in previous. So I ordered the second one and told him I wanted the first or something like that, I remember.
I think this is one that I had just skimmed through that list, didn't see anything of note, didn't really know what this was, and didn't think twice about it. But when you suggested we review it, it's like, yeah, you know, I'll check it out.
Yeah, I just picked it for the creative team. It's, you know, it looked like it may be decent.
I think it was.
Yeah.
I think it was a solid story. Again, great art, great story, certainly helped. It was interesting when the thing starts out in the winter of 1944 and we get the invaders.
Yes.
Hadn't really expected that.
Me neither.
Clearly, this is early in Cap's career because he doesn't have the circular shield. But, you know, hey, that's cool. We get a little bit going on with that. And then there was a bit of a thing that Cap goes through that I totally hadn't expected.
Me neither. I was like, what's going on here?
I'm like, I want to find out more about this. This is enough of a hook to keep me going for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we get a little bit of a, I don't want to say a tease, but something more is coming kind of a thing before we jump forward to decades later.
Yes, very much so.
And when we get decades later, we're with a group of defenders, and this feels early-ish in their time. I'm not sure exactly when. I mean, this feels like the modern-day stuff is a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly. We have decades later, but we don't have a specific time frame.
Well, and it's not current day based on where the defenders are at, where the Avengers are at in their lineup.
Yep.
Which is cool.
They're all very different. Very different than their current iterations.
Yeah, but familiar enough.
Yes. I mean, we know who they are.
Yeah. So I thought this was a ton of fun because we don't get this era, you know, the classic look of Doctor Strange and a few others and stuff kind of often enough. And it was just a really fun story with the invaders, the defenders, the Avengers, a villain I didn't see coming.
Yeah, I didn't see him coming either. And but it was kind of cool seeing who was on the team, you know. Now I'm like, okay, yeah, I expected him now.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun stuff. It covered a lot of ground, and it had more of the feel and tone and style of what I like in comics than, frankly, a lot of modern comics have.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because it felt, retro without having retro art. So it's like a newer art, newer style, but it had that feel of a late 80s comic, I would guess I would say.
Yeah, there's a certain, for me, sweet spot in comics and stuff, and some of it goes back to the 80s, some of it even a little more recently and stuff, but there's a storytelling style where a ton happens in the issue, which certainly was the case here.
Yeah.
Nice, solid, clean artwork, which we absolutely had here. References to continuity in a story-enhancing way, not a story-detracting way.
Yep.
And I was really pleased with this issue.
Yeah, I thought they did a solid job. I thought Alan Davis wrote it really well. I think the art was done well. It was a fun read. It was a lot of material in here. Like you said, so much is going on, and it took you a little while to go through it. It's a little bit oversized. It's a $4.99 first issue, but it's packed full of material, and I didn't feel like it was overpriced for what I got.
Yeah, I think it was about 30 story pages, so while expensive at $4.99, it at least gave a solid amount of story for the money, so I didn't have any complaints there.
Me neither, and it hooked me, and it made me want to read the next issue, and I think this is a limited series, but it made me say, hey, I'm on board for this.
Yeah, it's a four-issue limited series, although it took me a little digging to find that out.
Yeah, okay.
They should have had that be a lot more obvious.
I would agree. I think I remember seeing something somewhere, something of this many issues, but I couldn't remember.
I had to hop onto the Previews World website, do a search just to find out how many, because it's one of those, well, if it's, I was assuming it'd be like a five or something. If it's that, you know, that's one thing. If it's an ongoing, yeah, I don't know.
So since this hit like a nostalgia type, or like for the writing style, not necessarily this book, is it something that you're like, wow, I want to get caught up on this and I want to continue with it?
Yes.
Ah, they got you.
Yeah, this is one that in hindsight, I think I should have pre-ordered. I think if they hadn't had the snag around year end and stuff, that would have helped. Not to say it would have made it on the list that way anyways, but it certainly wouldn't have hurt. But this is one that I think I'm going to reach out to Eric over at Cowabunga and get this added to my order.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And literally, this was a pull because with the solicit, I didn't know a lot about what was going on. I knew I liked the characters that were in there, but I saw the creative team. I'm like, it's probably going to be pretty good. So I got to read this.
Yeah, no, this was a great pick. It's hard to go wrong with this creative team. If you like them, there's a ton of other stuff that Alan Davis and stuff has done in the past. Whether it's with the same artist or not, I think so. I just don't know.
I just can't remember what he's done right now off the top of my head.
Well, I know some of the stuff he's done. I'm thinking it might have been more. Well, I was thinking it was Clandestine, and I'd have to go look. This is where, again, Comic Book DB was just a great resource because you could just hop over there, type in the creator name.
It's boom, boom, and you're there.
Yeah, sort it by chronology if you want and whatnot. So I'm hoping they get a replacement site kind of up and going before too long.
Fingers crossed on that one.
But yeah, this I totally recommend. I thought it was a lot of fun. I went with a solid A on this, and like I said, totally recommend it.
Yeah, we're very close. I went with an A-. I really enjoyed it, and I think people, if it's in your budget, it's probably something you would enjoy, especially if you like that sweet spot of something feeling like it's like an 80s type book, but not necessarily reading like an 80s book, which is hard to do. It has that little bit of a classic character feel, not that classic, but it's written and with modern art that it's not going to be jarring for you.
It's got a little bit of a retro nostalgia feel without feeling dated.
That's the way I would put it. Yeah, exactly. You phrased it perfectly.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is another Marvel book. It's Thor number one.
Yay.
We got Donny Cates doing the writing here, and I had basically dropped off of Thor a while ago.
Shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. It's not your thing. I understand.
I was getting a little bored. They were spending too much time on Asgard and stuff, which is a legit take on the character, just not one that I love.
Understand.
And I gotta say that at the beginning, there was a ton of captions in this.
A lot of captions.
And I
was kind of surprised a little bit.
I was a little surprised, a little turned off. Not entirely sure what the whole rainbow thing with the hammer was doing. At first, I'm like, are they rebuilding the rainbow bridge this way?
Yeah.
But when we got to kind of the main moment of it and stuff with the cameo by the Avengers and stuff, it's like, okay, that's kind of humorous, kind of cool, whatever. Little silly, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, okay, I sort of, you know, see where they're going with this. But then we actually get to Thor himself.
Yeah, Thor himself, exactly.
And again, as they kick back to Asgard, I'm like, well, this is a little less of my interest than back on Earth, but okay. Hadn't realized some of the status quo change and stuff here, but I haven't been following it, so not surprised and not bothered by that.
Yeah, a lot changed with Thor, you know, with his status. And for the people who hadn't been reading it and may want to read War of the Realms, I won't say what the status change is. But yeah, he's changed a lot, including physically and his status in Asgard. But and it's big changes, I think.
Well, and just the look of Asgard has changed.
That too. That all that stuff kind of took place over Jason Aaron's run, which just ended. But yeah, it was really cool here that Donny Cates came on board and picked up right where he left off. And while not detracting from anything Jason Aaron did, I felt like took it in a completely different direction.
Oh, absolutely took it in a different direction. We've got a visitor to this new Asgard that I did not expect.
Yeah, I know. That was surprising.
made a fairly grand entrance in an unexpected way.
Yes.
A couple of twists and turns there in what's going on. That was kind of fun. And then when we get a few other people kind of called in for a consult or whatever, it's like, hadn't expected these particular ones to come in, but okay, kind of cool. One or two, not too surprising given the creative team.
Yep.
But then what happens there at the end to kind of give a new take and direction and stuff for where this title may go, I thought was kind of cool. I mean, it's Donny Cates is telling a good story here. There's certainly an epic scope to it.
Yeah.
But as much as I liked this and I thought it was good, I don't know that it's one that I really feel the need to stay current with.
You know what's weird? I know exactly what you're saying for you, but not for me. And it comes down to taste and maybe what you like and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I knew when I was reading this, it's written well, it's a great story, but I felt like, man, it's probably not something John's going to, like, this isn't really in your wheelhouse as far as, like, maybe the direction it's going or what it's dealing with.
Well, and I think part of it is not being all in on Marvel. The relevance of what's going on here is much less for me.
Yeah, and me having read a lot more, I see the characters that have changed in here, the changes that have happened recently over those last, you know, books that I've read. And so I see it all carrying through. I'm like, okay, it's a continuation. So the continuity's working for me. And although I was really sad that Jason Aaron's run ended, and I love that run, I felt like, man, he passed the torch off and Donny Cates picked it up and he's just running with it. And it was just a really enjoyable read. And I'm like, wow, I'm on board for the roller coaster ride. Let's do this.
Yeah, I guess for me, having sat out a few go-rounds on the roller coaster lately, it was a little less relevant and I wasn't less accessible, but it was I was a little more detached from it, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, because like when I've gone away from comics. I mean, you haven't gone away from comics altogether, but I've been away from comics for periods of my life. And we talked about that before in the past. And so if I left for, like, let's say a 10-year period or 8-year period, and I leave and I come back and I pick up that book and everything's kind of different, I don't know why it's different, you have that detachment of you almost feel lost. This isn't who I know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if I really want to go read 8 years worth of material to find out. So you either jump on board if it's something that you're enjoying, or you just kind of like, okay, that's cool, but you don't feel the obligation to continue with it. And I think that's where you are.
Yeah, and there's an aspect of where this left off. It's like, okay, it's going to be an interesting story arc, or maybe a little more. But there's also an aspect of what they're doing here, this too shall pass.
Yeah, I know what you mean with that, because the way Aaron's run ended, which I know you didn't read that, this too shall pass. This will not be the end, or this won't be a status quo going forward. Now, did you read that piece at the end that Donny Cates wrote?
I skimmed it. I didn't read it all.
Okay, I kind of started to read it, and I was like, okay, I read the first sentence or two, and then I was like, I got to get through my review, so I can't read all this. And then someone posted a picture of it on the Slack channel, and for the life of me, I can't remember who posted it, but thank you. But since they posted a picture of it, I went back and I read it, and I was like, wow, that's a really good read. Not something like, oh, how much this character meant to me, or, you know, anything like that. But it was more along the lines of, you know, what writers give up or what artists give up, because, you know, we get to consume the material and enjoy the creation. But when they're creating, how they basically give up the magic a little bit because they already know where the character's going. They can't wait for it to happen. You know, they're in the meetings. And so it takes away a little bit of the magic actually working in the industry. So he said, he's like, it's cool. I'm here to make the sacrifice for you guys to make the magic happen, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I think for that sort of a text page, I like that a lot better than the, oh, I've been working to this all my life, or, you know, whatever kind of entry speech they typically give.
Yeah, we see those things too much. I'm like, oh my gosh, we got to read it again.
What I hadn't realized, I don't think, is that Donnie Cates is looks like he might be local to me here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I saw that too. So you could actually bump into the guy at a local grocery store and not know it.
Could be. It would be funny.
Yeah. So anyways, maybe if you see him at one of the cons, you'd be like, where in Austin are you, by the way?
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nod. He'll be like, do I have a stalker? No, but on this book, I had a lot of fun with it. And it was kind of like, I wouldn't say a validation, but it was a nod to everything that I've been reading. And so I was so happy. And I feel like Donnie Cates going to do a good job on it. How long he'll go with it, that's what I don't know.
I would expect him to go for at least 2-3 years minimum, but you will find out.
My fingers are crossed because I like the direction he's taking it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I'm curious if he stays on that long, how much of what's going on near the end of that is seeds that are being planted now.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I don't know. But I kind of got excited for this again because I like the characters that are in here. I like Thor. I mean, I was okay with Thor. When they start getting into too much of the Asgardian speak, that's where I'm like totally detached. I'm like, thee and thou. I'm like, okay, I'm tuning out a little bit. But they seem to have toned that down recently from like what they did in the past. And when they tone that down, you give me great art, you give me a fun story, a different take, something that I haven't seen, which is hard to do when you're writing Marvel or DC, something I haven't seen. You got me excited. And Donnie Cates has been doing that. He's been taking characters that we've seen for years, like Venom, or here we go with Thor, or Ghost Rider, and giving you a view of him or her or whatever character it is that we haven't seen before.
Well, and that haven't seen before thing, that's a bar that just by its very nature gets higher and higher every day.
Yeah, that's got to be so hard to do because now we're dealing with, 60 years of stories? That's crazy.
Well, I mean, there were things that we hadn't seen before reading this comic that now we have.
Exactly. And nobody can do this again now because we will have said it, seen it, and they will have referenced it.
Well, and they can do it again. And for somebody, it will still be new because they hadn't read this.
Yeah, I mean, agree.
That's part of why I never believe that there is a kind of an expiration date or whatever on spoilers. Not everybody has read every story, even if it's been around 20 years or something.
Yeah, very true. There's some things that I still haven't read, which are considered classics out there. And there's some that I finally did read, and I'm glad I did, but thank God nobody spoiled it for me.
There are people on this planet who have not watched the original Star Wars film, have not watched Avengers Endgame, insert whatever movie or TV show or comic you want to put in.
Yep.
You know, so it's new to them.
And exactly.
The thing is, somebody else could do a similar take on this in 10 years, and it could be a great story, but it is going to get potentially compared to this by somebody.
Yep.
You know? So it's fun when they do something new and interesting, but again, that gets harder and harder every day.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see which of the characters change back, revert back after this or whatever, because you have the main character, Thor. You have some of the other characters, which I'm not going to mention because I think it'll ruin it. But one of them is probably a little bit darker looking than what you expected before. And that's just kind of a interesting thing. And you know who I'm referencing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't read a series, you wouldn't know what's going on with that. But I'm curious how long these things will last. And I don't know.
Well, at some point, I think every character almost reverts back to its iconic nature.
Yeah.
So this take on Thor, at some point in the future, will have gone back to, you know, the more earthbound Thor, possibly even the Donald Blake kind of Thor. You know, it gives it enough time, everything reverts.
Yeah, right now it's Asgard heavy, and one day he'll be back to an undercover, you know, alias on planet Earth pretending he's a human again.
Yeah, yeah.
And something's going to happen.
There's nothing right or wrong about that. But at some point you're going to have a creator who grew up, and those were the stories that he really loved and wants to tell stories like.
Yeah. And for somebody, that'll be the character that they know and they love growing up. and that'll be the Thor they know, and they'll be talking. We'll be talking about this Asgardian thing. They'll be like, "What Asgardian stuff? That's boring."
But then they'll get followed by somebody who either loved Jason Aaron's run or Straczynski's run, or
yeah,
you know, some other run that was heavy in the Asgard stuff.
And over it goes.
Yeah, the pendulum just swings back and forth and every which way.
Yeah, and we're just here for the ride, and I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. So keep dishing out these good stories, and I'll keep reading them.
Yeah, I think this was good. I think it was not a bad start to his run. Had I read War of the Realms and a few other things, it probably would have worked a little better for me. It didn't work poorly.
Yeah.
But it's also not something I really feel the need to stay with.
Yeah, you and I know that because this, I feel like, is Jason Aaron Thor, War of the Realms heavy. You had to have read that for this to be impactful.
So for me, it was good to read. I liked it well enough. I'm going to go with a B minus on this. But yeah, I don't think I'm going to keep going. I didn't pick this up physically. I read a digital copy, and I'm good with that.
Okay. And we're usually not that far apart, but this time we're going to be far apart because I'm just in a happy mood. It's 2020. It's a better year. I'm elated that Donny Cates picked up the torch and did a great job with this. If I read War of the Realms, I read Jason Aaron's Thor, so I felt like this was a worthy successor. I went ahead and gave it the A+. I'm loving it.
Cool. I'm glad it worked for you. That's great.
Yeah. So if you've read those books, you'll enjoy this.
No, and I can totally see where you got that out of this. It's just that it didn't work that way for me.
It was more excitement because I felt like it was a continuation of what I've been loving, and I felt kind of sad when in 2019 it ended. I'm like, oh, we get to continue? Yes. And so it was just that feeling of exuberance. I was like, yeah, I'm on board. Let's make this happen.
Cool.
Yeah. So anyways, I felt like we got some good reads this week.
Yeah, we got some decent reads.
Yeah. And then anything else stick out to you this week in your reading?
Not really. A lot of it was just kind of okay. I did get a couple of the TKO trades.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Only read one of them, but since we're going to review in a few weeks, since we've already recorded that episode, the first issue of the TKO ones, I won't say which one I read, but it was the one that I had said in that episode I was most interested in reading, and I liked it.
Oh, okay, good, good. So I'm going to read that one too. So that's on my docket. And so. I actually read Marauders, which I really enjoyed, and I read X-Men, which I really enjoyed.
I thought both of those were good reads, yeah.
Yeah, so those were two that were kind of stood out to me this, you know, in this week's stack. I thought they were really fun.
Yeah, I read those, Flash, Doctor Doom, Dial H, Detective, all sorts of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a big week, but so I got through it pretty quick, but there's some decent reads out there. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, have you been seeing on the Slack channel all this 5G talk that's been going on?
Yeah, I've been seeing bits of it. I haven't followed it too closely. But yeah,
me too. So I was interested because you had a comment on there. I didn't know if you want to talk about it, like just on this, you know, here at the end of the show.
Well, yeah. I think there are a lot of people not particularly overjoyed with where DC's at these days.
Yes,
I count myself among them. But it's easy enough to say, oh, they need a change of leadership or whatever, you know, fire thus and so. And I'm not going to say I necessarily disagree with any of that. The question I have, because I've got major concerns with this whole idea of let's age the characters, put new people in those identities or whatever, and go for a new generation of heroes. It's as if DC thinks the problem is the characters they've got.
That's kind of scary to me. I don't think that's the problem.
I don't think it's the problem at all, but it's the impression I've gotten from the current leadership for really the last decade or so.
Yeah, and that worries probably longer. Me not even being a DC, you know, super fan, that worries me because I think the characters are timeless if they're written well and if they're, you know, if they take them in the correct direction, I would say.
Absolutely. So the question then becomes, for anyone who thinks they need a regime change or direction change or whatever at DC, and again, I don't disagree with that, what do you think it should be? You know, what should DC leadership be doing to make their stuff more palatable, more interesting to us versus just saying, well, don't do that. It's not actionable advice or suggestions.
It's true. What are the solutions to get them out of the quagmire that they're kind of, it feels like they're in a quicksand right now.
I would agree with that. And everything I'm hearing about this 5G stuff, because I guess Franklin had posted as we record this on the 7th, some stuff where going into the holidays, they were going to do like they got an approval to do like another convergence sort of event to buy time to set up this 5G stuff for a few months or whatever before launching it. But then that buy into that kind of weakened, and then it's a, well, do we want to do this? And kind of some hemming and hawing at the offices of DC. Now, all of that was off bleeding cool.
Yes.
And it flat out said, this is gossip, this is rumors, take it for what you will.
Yeah, which I'm like, why even write it at that point?
Because they get the clicks, they get the attention.
Very true. That's the reason why they write it.
And, you know, Rich Johnson has had that website up and going for, geez, I forget how long, forever.
Yeah, and sometimes they do get things right. The gossip or the rumors is correct.
Absolutely. There's been actually a time or two many years past, like probably 10, 20 years past, I actually sent one or two things to him of, hey, I saw or heard this at San Diego, thought you might find it interesting.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I didn't know that.
So sometimes if you're just in the right place at the right time, you can hear things, particularly at some conventions,
yeah,
that I don't think the people behind the scenes realize is getting overheard. You know, I had one time at San Diego, I was having lunch somewhere, and there were people from a company talking about what upcoming titles were no longer going to be kind of upcoming after that. You know, it's like, yeah, I think we should get rid of this one, that one, and the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, it's a business meeting. It's not like I was trying to eavesdrop or something on them, but, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, minding my own business, and I'm hearing this stuff.
Like, hey, FYI.
But
yeah,
for all of that stuff, I mean, the people at these companies are trying to do the best job they can in what they think is the right direction. It's not working for us in some cases. What constructive feedback could we give them? What are we looking for that they're not delivering? Where do they think they're going wrong? I mean, that's a lot of why I do the podcast, is not that I expect them to be listening to this and taking notes or whatever, but maybe they'll listen to it and you know, hear what I'm saying when I say, you know, hey, you know, play a little better with continuity, or if you're going to, you know, replace all the characters, realize that gives me an out on buying all of your books.
Yeah.
Because it's not the characters I've invested the last 40 or some odd years, you know, reading.
Yeah. I know they need to have good writers. I know they need to get the characters back true to who they are. My worry is if they're really looking at aging the characters and having a new, you know, bunch of characters take on the monikers or the icons that we know. I feel that's almost like a new 52 reboot type thing. You know, here's the new Batman, here's the new Superman, here's the new this, the new that. And I think people have read these characters for the last, you know, 20, 30, 40 years plus, they're going to be disappointed to see the characters they knew and they grew up with go away. And I think that's a little bit worrisome, because the bulk of the people that buy these things are people who've been reading these comics for 10, 15, 20 years plus.
Yeah, I think the big problem I've got with DC is between the new 52, Rebirth, and a couple of retoolings, major retoolings in between and around those things, they don't stick to their guns. They publish something and then kind of almost either unpublish it or unacknowledge it. And to suggest that the 5G thing is, well, everything we ever published happened, so you can have it all, we're sorry. I don't think they really get what's wrong.
Yeah, you know, one thing I can say about Marvel, they'll screw up royally. They've done it multitudes of time, but they don't try to just pretend like it never happened. They just, okay, let's change it and go this direction, and they'll just put on a new artist, new writer, and they kind of go this way, but they don't really dump all the continuity, and I think that's a big mistake when they do it.
They certainly don't do it in line-wide events. There are a couple of times where they will sweep certain things under the rug of, yeah, that was a bad idea, so let's just kind of ignore it and hope people forget about it.
Yeah, that's true. Peter Parker and what was it when he's a clone?
You could argue
Ben Reilly.
Any of the Clone Saga stuff and whatnot, and they've done that a few times.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple of times, they'll let the cat out of the bag as to a secret identity, but then they'll put it back in, and a few in-story kind of shenanigans.
Yeah.
But I guess it's a matter of don't publish stories that you need to disavow later.
Yeah, very much. It's almost like I think right now the stewardship's a little bit better at Marvel. I think that's what I've been feeling, because like this take on Thor that we see at the very end of this page, you know, that's kind of like a fun thing, but I don't think it'll mess up all the continuity, and I think it'll go away. And you and I both know it'll go away. But if they would have taken Thor and said, oh, now he's this new status quo, and here's new young Thor, some teenager with some teen angst, I don't think I'd like that at all. I'd be like, okay, I'm done reading this. I'm out.
Having sat through the Teen Tony era of Iron Man, I can relate. To me, what they did at the end of Thor is a status quo change that'll last for a duration of time.
Yeah.
He will revert back to whatever he reverts to. So that status quo will cease to be a current thing, but it will be something that can be referenced later, as he's now part of this kind of category of, you know, he has this history.
Yeah.
You know, just like there are certain people that in the Marvel Universe have grown or shrunk through the Pym particle, or, you know, whatever special thing you want to use, have had this super soldier serum in them or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there are certain things that, you know, have they been an X-Men? Have they been the Avenger? Whether they're currently one or not doesn't matter anymore. And the thing about it is Marvel's got a cohesive enough continuity that when we read Tarot and they had the Invaders, they had earlier versions of the Avengers and the Defenders, we kind of maybe not knew exactly where in the timeline it fit, but we knew roughly where it fit, and it felt natural to be, okay, we're at the point where this is the lineup of the Avengers.
It made sense to both of us.
Yeah.
And now if they did that with a New 52 look back, I might be completely confused because I didn't read New 52 and that made no sense to me, or it looks, feels completely different because it's a different Superman or a different this, completely different.
I'm not even sure I could tell you with any sort of definitiveness who is considered to have been a Justice Leaguer in the current continuity.
Wow. That's kind of scary.
I mean, there are obvious ones that it's a, yeah, clearly these people fit in, but there's a lot of others, I'm not so sure.
It might be, they might not.
And part of it's unclear storytelling, and part of it is they've changed it up a number of times.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's kind of frustrating. So it almost seems like, now the blame, I don't want to say the blame, but that seems like it's from on high. It's got to be from the editor-in-chief, that he doesn't have control of that, in my opinion.
I think for any shared universe, you've got to have strong editorial input to keep things cohesive, both at the line editor in terms of the individual book one and in terms of the editor-in-chief. But it also goes up to, do you have a chief creative officer? Do they have a coherent vision? Have they communicated that vision? Do the publishers and the other higher-ups kind of back the right thing? But also, are the creators on board with it? Do they understand the continuity well enough to play within it?
Yeah.
And this is a totally different issue for, you know, a creator-owned book, because, well, you don't have this other stuff to ring true to. You just have to stay true to what you're doing.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, much easier to write a creator-owned book. The continuity is whatever they're creating, and they're in and out in 20, 30, 12, 60 issues. They're done. Most of the time.
Even if you're going for hundreds and stuff, be it a Walking Dead, a Usagi Yojimbo, a Cerebus, a Spawn, whatever, or Uncle Scrooge type stuff, as long as you're consistent with what has gone before or evolve it to disavow gracefully certain things, that's fine.
Exactly.
It's when you just say, no, I really meant to say this.
That's when it gets kind of dicey.
That's when it gets dicey. So, you know, it's one of those things that I do think it's easy for us on the outside to say, oh, you shouldn't have done what you've done. But let's go with the theory they've been operating with the best of intent and stuff. Maybe they've lost their way, and certainly I think with DC a case can be made for that. But instead of saying, well, get rid of this, put somebody else in, what should that somebody else do, whether it's somebody else or the new people, if they could just, quote-unquote, see the light?
Yeah. I think we're going to find out where this is really going probably in the next 3 months for sure, because solicits will start, you know, getting lined up for the summer and everything like that. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that things go well for DC going forward, because I want to see both, you know, Marvel and DC do well at the same time versus one in the slumps and the other one killing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's see. We've got Preview Spotlight 148 coming up. We're doing this one a little bit early, so the deadline's going to be the morning of January 25th. That is before Previews comes out, which would probably be on the 29th, but oh well. Yeah. So what we're doing is the game plan for this one is one clip per person. What title or titles, plural, as few or as many as you want, new or old, should people check out and why?
Cool.
Basically, free reign to go recommend whatever, you know, if it's a current title, whether it's a trade paperback, or hey, go check out the back issues if you can find them of this title by this creator or what have you. Just what should people go read?
And make it fun.
Make it fun. It's, again, chance to promote the comics you love and stuff. And I need those clips by Saturday morning, January 25th. The episode will go out in its regular scheduled slot. But this way I can get it done early so I can do some other stuff.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We'll be back to the regular format for the March previews. That previews comes out on February 25th. So its deadline is going to be Saturday morning, March 7th. Regular format, one clip per pick based on what's in that previews.
Cool.
So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batman number 86 from DC, Star number 1 from Marvel, and Clock number 1 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.